Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care. Niva nijonle go shavothya, nijonle go shavothya. Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Die! Music from the drum Northern Cree off their Kenyan record CD entitled Nikamu, which means to sing. The name of that powwow song was The Dream. Dreams are very important in Native societies. Dreams can teach and guide a person in following their spirit path in life. Medicine healers would use herbal plants and chants that would help people dream as a way to restore a person's health and well-being. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. In today's program, we share a conversation with holistic healthcare practitioner, Sharon Botch. Healthcare is an important subject to Yat Kedishi Native Center. Millions of people throughout the world suffer greatly from poor nutrition, disease, and a variety of health problems related to lifestyle and poverty. Indigenous peoples are especially vulnerable to poor health and lack of medical services. Prior to contact with non-Native explorers, traders, and settlers, we Native people were strong, healthy people. It is a sad state of affairs that in the world's most wealthy nation, millions of Americans do not have the money for health care. Medical services and prescription medicines are only available to those who can afford health insurance. Less and less people in the United States are able to get medical coverage and the treatment they need. This is a tragedy for the poor. American Indians are the poorest of the poor. As the current political debate over health care demonstrates, America's system, despite millions of dollars spent, ranks very low in the list of countries who care for their citizens' health. Filmmaker Michael Moore's movie Sicko is a great expose on the American health care system's greedy medical industry, namely the hospitals, the American Medical Association, drug manufacturers, and insurance companies. The U.S. Center for Disease Control, the CDC, produces an annual report on the health status of the nation. The yearly survey is submitted by the Secretary of Health and Human Services to the President and to Congress. Of particular interest to Yat Kedishi Native Center is the information about Native Americans. It is very alarming news. CDC's National Center for Health Statistics charts and tables detail the state of American Indian health. Tribal people in America are at the bottom of most every health indicator, such as life expectancy, mortality, disease prevalence, risk factors, infant deaths, elders' illnesses, poor nutrition, dentistry, eye care, availability of mental health services, per capita financial health care expenditures, length of time to wait for treatment, location and availability of medical facilities, number of laboratories, state-of-the-art diagnostic testing equipment, and quality of wellness services such as aftercare and home care, counseling, and therapy. It is fair to say that some Native reservation communities, due to tribal gaming revenue, are now able to have better health care than a decade ago. Indian country as a whole, however, is still the worst off population in U.S. health demographics. Due to the historic termination era in the 1950s, Presidents Truman and Eisenhower, with their signatures on paper, caused many Native people to lose their official Native identity and tribal status. This U.S. policy to tell Indian tribes they no longer existed and therefore ineligible for federal health care, as promised in our treaties, had a major impact on tribal people's health. It took many years to regain our place as Native nations who have always been here in the Western Hemisphere, certainly long before colonial pirates like Christopher Columbus washed ashore. In the current time, there are still many Native peoples who are not officially considered, quote, American Indians, unquote. There are many tribal communities who have been fighting for what's called federal recognition status. This exemplifies arrogance and racism on the part of the American government. Many Indians in the 1950s were actually given a one-way bus ticket to the nearest city by the U.S. government. This means that nearly half of all American Indians now live in urban areas. In many cases, many urban Indians are cut off from Indian health care services or a tribe's reservation medical clinic. Indian centers in major cities, which are not funded or staffed by Indian Health Service medical professionals, struggle to provide even minimal health care to this neglected part of American society. Another insulting problem, many of today's Native children and youth may have several tribal blood lineages, or they might be of mixed Indian and non-Indian ancestry. Both of these conditions may mean not meeting the blood quantum requirement for being an enrolled member of a federally recognized tribe. This prevents many Native children and young people from having access to health care. The U.S. Indian Health Service, the nation's program for American Indians and Alaskan Natives, created from the Congressional 1921 Snyder Act, can only serve federally recognized tribal citizens. This leaves a large number of Native peoples without access to health care. It is important to mention that health care continues to be one of the major obligations of the U.S. government's trust responsibilities, guaranteed by our treaties with Washington. The federal government has failed miserably to live up to this legal agreement. The U.S. has violated every treaty made with Native peoples. The 1971 Public Law 94-437, known as the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which authorized health care for federally recognized Native Americans and Alaskan Natives, has not been funded or reauthorized since 2001. Health care for Indian people is getting worse due to the very low financial and political priority of Washington, despite the fact that this is a violation of treaties, which are international law. Alcoholism, diabetes, drug abuse, poor nutrition, obesity, emotional trauma, and STDs are just a few of the very serious epidemic medical problems facing Indian people. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, I myself, like many other Native Americans, have diabetes and am a kidney dialysis patient. This is why I take the subject of health care and health policy very seriously. Health is not just a matter of physical conditions due to body chemistry and functioning of your organ systems, such as your heart, lungs, kidney, liver, digestive, endocrine, nervous, and circulatory systems. Health is also a matter of one's emotional state. For Native peoples, it is also a matter of one's spiritual wellness in connection to our land and culture. Poor health in Indian country is a system of cultural breakdown as a result of many years of colonialism. Native peoples' health seriously declined when we were forced onto concentration camps called reservations. This started from earliest contact with Europeans who later became the Americans. It wasn't long after colonial settlements, such as Jamestown and Plymouth, that my ancestors were unable to hunt or fish in our tribal lands and waters due to the white man's warfare on Indians and theft of our homelands. Like many indigenous peoples, my ancestors were very skilled organic farmers. They also gathered many edible plants and medicinal herbs prior to being forced off our native territories. My Wabanaki people, like other Atlantic Coast Native nations, were sustained by the sacred quahog clam and other marine life for millennia. Caribou, moose, beaver, rabbit, and other animal relatives also kept us healthy before they were expurated or contaminated by pollution and industrial chemicals in the environment. Hunger, sickness, and even starvation became the scourge of the white man. As Manifest Destiny sanctioned westward expansion of pioneers, Many tribes were victims of purposely poisoned foods and diseased blankets. The outright killing of the buffalo, which sustained the Great Plains Indian nations, probably was the greatest cause of physical and emotional sickness. It was part of the U.S. plan to try to starve prairie Indians into submission. It is necessary to comment on the outlawing of Native spirituality, Indian religious practices. Native ceremonies is what kept and still keeps my people in a spiritual relationship with Mother Earth and all of our relations, Kanan Wantakwasin, the animals, birds, plants, trees, fish, and aquatic life, what in English is called nature. This is why we were healthy people. Prohibiting traditional cultural spiritual beliefs by the government was certainly a major cause of emotional mental sickness in Indian people. During the colonial era, missionaries like Reverend Elliot in Massachusetts, with military support of colonial magistrates, forced Indians into what is euphemistically called prayer towns. In actuality, if Indians did not convert to white man's Christianity, Indians were rounded up and forced into slavery. A few of my ancestors were able to escape to live with tribes further north and west of missionary towns like Ponkapog, Natick, and Pawtucket. Spanish missionaries like Friar Junipero Serra, one of the greatest mass murderers in history, likewise through his infamous mission system in what is now called California, was the cause of much sickness and death. Government-sanctioned Christian missionaries in the 19th and 20th century not only destroyed sacred artifacts and prayer sites, but literally kidnapped Indian children and forced them into boarding schools to convert them to become so-called civilized Christians. These residential schools, many of which were located on U.S. military forts, were in actuality juvenile prisons. Many Native children were severely beaten, sexually abused, and even died. Years ago, I visited the U.S. Army Fort Carlisle, the location of the first federal Indian school. At Carlisle, I walked through the graveyard of many Indian children who died there. Founded in 1879, under the command of Captain Richard Henry Pratt, children from 140 different tribes were forcibly tried to be assimilated into white society. Three generations of American Indians were victims of this era that tried to, quote, kill the Indian in us, unquote. It was only until the passage of the 1978 American Indian Religious Freedom Act that Native Americans could openly practice our traditional spiritual beliefs, including healing ceremonies, without fear of being arrested and imprisoned. Throughout Indian country, spiritual leaders and traditional healers conduct what is called wiping away the tear ceremony to help lessen the boarding school trauma. Wiping away the tear ceremony helps restore wellness to those Indian victims, many of whom are now elderly. Many Native Americans and indigenous peoples throughout the world are still living with the consequences of colonialism and the breakdown of our traditional societies. Intergenerational trauma as a result of historic conquest and forced assimilation have caused broken spirits, which are the underlying cause of poor health. Restoring Indian people's health and well-being requires holistic healing that takes into account physical and emotional symptoms. Western medical practices do not yet appreciate and respect this important principle. Many hospitals in the United States and Canada do not allow Indian medicine healers to treat Indian patients. Many clergy are very reluctant to permit Native spiritual leaders provide counseling and prayers with Native patients. When I was last hospitalized, I had to argue my American Indian Religious Freedom Act right to have a Native spiritual leader be allowed in my hospital room. As I mentioned a few moments ago, Native people's state of health is very much related to our cultural, spiritual relationship to Mother Earth and all of our natural world relatives, what in English is called nature. Even today, the desecration and destruction of sacred lands for agricultural, energy, and natural resources development causes many Native people to suffer depression as a result of witnessing what's happening to Mother Earth. In the 1980s, as an ecologist and journalist involved in the In Defense of Sacred Lands project, I helped document the trauma felt by Native communities whose lands were being raped by the energy industry, timber companies, and agribusiness. The Bureau of Land Management's use of huge anchors and chains pulled by massive bulldozers in order to rip apart fragile arid lands such as sacred pinyon pine ecosystems of the so-called U.S. Southwest causes great emotional pain to Native people who consider Mother Earth sacred. Native people's health is an environmental justice issue. Native peoples have long been involved in the movement for health and environmental justice. The preamble and 17 principles of environmental justice that were agreed to at the first National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit have a major emphasis on health. I was one of the indigenous delegates to that historic 1991 conference. The Indigenous Peoples Caucus statement at the first National Symposium on Health Research Needs to Ensure Environmental Justice in 1994 is a very important statement on health issues. I am proud to have participated in the writing of that declaration. The pollution of lakes, rivers, and coastal waters, where it is now unsafe to eat fish and marine life, not only has major biological health impacts, but also affects the emotional health of Native peoples. Many fishing tribes can no longer teach their young generation the cultural ceremonial practices of fishing. Contamination from uranium mining, milling, and nuclear weapons testing has greatly poisoned indigenous peoples throughout the world who have been most victimized by the atomic age. Forest and land use activities by government and industry, such as pulp and paper mills, working 24 hours a day, destroying the forest at the rate of 100 trees an hour in my Wabanaki homeland territory, certainly makes me sick. I'm not just talking about the poisonous dioxin chemicals being dumped into the Penobscot River or the toxic brown haze being spewed from pulp mills causing air pollution. I'm not just talking about the enormous amounts of herbicides and pesticides sprayed on the spruce fir forest lakes ecosystem. This was best expressed by my hero, Rachel Carson's classic book, Silent Spring. She wrote how industrial chemicals in agriculture and forestry poison Mother Earth, causing cancer in people and in wildlife. I am talking about how arrogance, disrespect, and greed causes emotional and physical sickness to those who care about Mother Earth. We humans need to heal ourselves and our society. I hope today's program will offer some thoughts on this. It is now my great honor to welcome holistic health practitioner Sharon Bartsch to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Thank you, Ones. It's a pleasure to be here and meet with you today. I take it as a real honor and have a lot of appreciation for what you're offering people.
Sharon, how did you become interested in holistic health and healthcare policy issues?
Yes, I was once asked, how did I get into holistic medicine? And I think, as in all choices in our lives, it's the coming together of many various factors that bring something about. It's not a one-dimensional view, which I often find is the perspective in the Western model. I actually had some digestive issues after traveling to China with my father, who is a Western medical practitioner, in the 1980s. And my sister, who we were raised in a natural environment and incorporated nature a lot into our modalities, but she had studied macrobiotics and more Eastern philosophies. My father gave me antibiotics after our trip to China to help my stomach heal, which hadn't really healed the issue. And then my sister asked me, well, what have you been doing? I had been sitting traveling and eating lots of food as a guest in another country, and she said, well, you need to exercise and eat brown rice. And so she made me go jogging and eat brown rice for 2 days, and then my stomach pain was gone. So that was kind of my first step into really wanting to explore a holistic paradigm for healing.
Sharon, in today's program introduction, I briefly mentioned how a person's health is not just physiological. I spoke about how a person's health is also related to their emotional feelings, what is called mental health by Western doctors. This is especially important when considering Native people's health conditions. As I also said in today's program introduction, Indigenous people's health also depends upon our cultural spiritual wellness, which is based on each tribe's connection to Mother Earth and to Kinon-Wontakwisin, all of our relatives of the natural world, the animals, birds, trees, plants, fish, and aquatic life, the soil and insect beings. We ecologists refer to this web of life as our biosphere. Witnessing the desecration and destruction of Mother Earth is at the root of Native people's reasons for sickness. Certainly, damage and deterioration of one's heart and circulatory system, lungs and respiratory system, digestive system, kidneys and liver, and exposure to poisonous chemicals, toxins, and diseases are causal reasons for poor health. What I am referring to is what I call spirit sickness. It is an emotional mental health trauma Indigenous people have suffered and continue to suffer from what has happened to Mother Earth and the loss of our Native cultural spiritual lifeways as a result of Native people's 517 years history with the Wampisikatonk, my Algonquin Native language word for the white man, meaning people who came across the great water, the ocean. The restoration of wellness for Native peoples, in addition to better nutrition, exercise, and non-exposure to pollution and environmental toxins, also requires treatment for spirit sickness. The emotional trauma Native peoples have experienced for generations from colonization's destruction of tribal cultures and desecration of Native lands has caused a state of deep psychological depression. Only a holistic healthcare modality that includes spirit healing will help restore Indigenous people's health. Sharon, would you please talk about the holistic paradigm, including treating spirit sickness? Your holistic approach, like traditional Native healers, treats the whole person, his or her body, mind, and spirit. While my question focuses on Indigenous peoples, I think holistic health is an issue for all peoples.
I think it's a very good and excellent and deep question, Ones, that you're asking. And in my experience, I've come to believe or experience and see that healing really needs to incorporate the mind-body connection. I have training as an acupuncture physician and doctor of oriental medicine, having studied acupuncture and then going on to get a master's in herbology with an Asian Chinese orientation. Since then, I've gone on to study hypnosis and neurolinguistic programming as well as nutrition and applied kinesiology, which is like a subtle electrical muscle testing of the body to see where things are out of balance. I think it's important when we have major health issues come up to really look at them from as many angles as we can find. And I often think of the Titanic as an example because it was many things coming together, as is any situation in our lives. It can be what we've inherited, toxins from our environment, our work environment. My grandfather used to have a lot of skin cancer and he worked at an asbestos plant. And I tend to have skin issues. But then You can also take that and you can support it physically with different detox supplements that we work with. I really love the muscle testing that I've incorporated lately because we check energetically where people are out of balance by accessing organ points on meridian pathways through the body. So we can say their large intestine point or their kidney point or their liver point is deficient or imbalanced. And then we actually take organic whole food supplements or herbs and hold them over different areas and retest, and the body will become strong if it has what it needs to rebalance itself. So that's been very powerful from a physical aspect, as well as acupuncture, which putting needles in or acupressure or working with ears to access the body through the feet or hands or ears, you can get things flowing again. Basically, in Chinese medicine, which to me is another native cultural medicine, they did meditation way back, and it started as a meditative process, and they could actually feel the energy moving through their body in the meridian, or like rivers of energy through their body, and they felt the chi or the vitality coming through. The acupuncture gets things flowing. However, the question is, why is it not flowing? Generally, in our culture nowadays, it's a major, major deficiency. In other words, people are not getting what they need in their body. So there's four major supplements that will start. And to me, that's a starting base for people. We're getting to the mind aspect next. But to begin with, a super green supplement to bring oxidation, oxygen, iron into the body, which carries oxygen, a whole food-based vitamin, multivitamin, and a mineral, because we miss the trace minerals. One of the biggest toxins to our body now is refined sugar, the cause of most health imbalances, and it's so perpetuated. Also, processed oils being very unhealthy, causing just toxic buildup in our systems. So one of the things I do, I've been teaching a nutrition class at an addiction center and help people learn about whole foods. And there are whole sweeteners like xylitol or dried sugar cane juice, where they found studies that people chewing sugar cane did not get cavities because it was all the minerals were in the product. So what happens when we process foods is we take things out, and then when we eat things that are processed, they want to take minerals out of our body so that they become whole. And then another issue is something like reverse osmosis water, which pulls the minerals out of pipes. Well, it goes into our body. The minerals have been taken out, like Dasani and Aquafina, which are from the Detroit, one of them from the, often one source is the Detroit River. It's not really water anymore. It has the minerals. There's no communication. So it's almost like we're floundering without a communication network. But beyond the physical aspect, and one product I just love is the Japanese Kangen Glacier Structured Water, and that could be a whole program in itself, I think. But it's very vitalizing and restructures water to give that biological energy back to the body, which is only a temporal state found in glacier structured water. So it's very powerfully rejuvenating for people. I've never seen results like it with this product. And water, we're 70% water, so truly that would be the first place to start. But our mind even precedes that. And so as I worked with people, yes, you can get things flowing like in acupuncture, and in Chinese medicine they see the body like a garden. So it's not that there's one way to heal or balance something. You want to fertilize it proactively with healthy whole food organic supplements for say that are balanced, not like chemically made and alternating, because your body has to actually work to push out the excess if it's taking artificial amounts of things. So that's a toxin too. As far as our environmental things, I think it's very detrimental to the spirit to go out and have unhealthy air and not feel free to walk. And what's it doing to our mental landscape? I think of the Joni Mitchell song of concrete in our soul and arthritis, and it's about, you know, a lack of freedom and that openness that the native environment offers us, I find. As far as looking again at the mind space and having that open freedom, there's an amazing book that I've come across lately by Michael Lincoln. It's called Messages from the Body, and it's a very large book, and he was a child psychologist, and he studied behavior patterns and offers many options for people's mind state and what's happening behind a physical disease. Of course, there's always Louise Hay, and she does an excellent job in a very brief manner, but this goes into a little bit more detail. And I've found with clients it's generally very helpful to find a certain mind state behind things. I don't know the mind state for diabetes per se, but I say I had someone with hearing problems, and they brought up like hearing bad things and stepping away and disengaging. And so when I have clients come in, I like to work with them on positive things around them. And they're like, oh, that would be hard to think of something. So it really does correlate to the mind state. But I think so the hypnosis and neuro-linguistic programming is, the latter is reshaping our map of our reality. So it's almost, it's as if our life is an act or a theater. We're the creators of our own theater. And our perceptions of things, to me, are the core issue. The challenge that I have is you have clients that are open to the possibility, and oftentimes when they'll have a major issue, say with a current partner in their life, you want to go back to where did this occur for you as a child, and there's always a correlation. For example, people with relationship challenges or not trusting men or feeling safe around men, and then you go back and then their fathers would yell at them profoundly and it wasn't safe to be with men. So it's a very powerful process to really address one's life, and it takes a certain strength, I think, to really step into it, and a certain vulnerability. I share your concern about our environment and how the destruction of it is really a reflection of our own mindscape as well, and the importance of people coming together to protect that, because it's both physically and mentally and truly the future of our species, I think, is definitely something to be watched very carefully at this time.
Crippled and torn, came to us looking for bread and corn. He was unsightly and needed some care. Nobody helped him, no one dared. Wolf, turtle, or bear, who gave him food? Who clothed his back? A bear woman was good. Little light, both day and night. Took care of the old man all day and night. Aguahi, all across the land. Aguahi, you gave and gave. Aguahi, the lives you'll save. Anuwa. Each day a new sickness befell the old man. He told her to gather plants in her hand, to give thanks and an offering, a healer of the bear clan.
gathered all people around the old man to show them the healing. The plant in her hand. Everyone listened and wanted to know. The gift she was given, just where to go.
From Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah, off her Silverwave record CD entitled Sky Woman. The name of that song was Medicine Gift. I want to read the CD liner notes for this song, quote, Medicine Gift. The Bear Clan members are the healers among the Iroquois. They became so because a young woman offered bread, food, and clothing to a tattered old man. He had been turned away by every other clan. Each day, he had a new illness and would teach the young woman what medicine plant to pick to cure him. The Creator had come in the disguise of an old man to see which person had the goodness of heart to relieve suffering. Because of her generosity, the Creator would give all Bear Clan members the power of healing, unquote. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kadishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. In the studio today is holistic healthcare practitioner, my friend Sharon Bach. Sharon, Western so-called modern medicine has very little respect for holistic healing practices, especially indigenous people's medicine that has been used for many generations. A few Western doctors will call this traditional knowledge alternative medicine. I don't like that term since it denigrates ancient plant medicine knowledge into a folklore status. It is now time for Western medicine to appreciate and learn about traditional non-Western healing modalities. Contrary to all the public relations campaigns, or I should say public deception campaigns, by the American healthcare industry, that America is, quote, the best system in the world, unquote, the fact is the United States ranks very low on the list of countries that care for their citizens' health. America is number 36. This is well below even a number of third world countries. This fact is even more ridiculous considering how expensive medical care costs in America. The American Medical Association, insurance companies, the American Hospital Association, and the pharmaceutical industry have for many years dominated national health policy. Their political lobbying exerts huge amounts of influence over legislative issues. It is common knowledge that healthcare industry lobbyists even help write legislative drafts in cooperation with congressional and agency staffers. Many high-level healthcare industry executives are appointed to a variety of advisory boards and agency committees. This gives the industry vast amount of influence over those government agencies that are supposed to regulate them. The healthcare industry's financial campaign contributions are just a small investment on the profit return they get from America's healthcare system. Many can even write them off as a business expense. So it is no wonder that the status quo of Western medicine, especially in the United States, does not recognize holistic healing, since it will cost this big business to lose big money. Sharon, would you please share your thoughts about what I've just spoken on?
As far as the history of Western medicine, having been raised in that environment, I feel that it is very, at this point in time, very strongly dominated by the pharmaceutical company, which is a very large revenue-making aspect of government. And obviously government prefers having money coming in to support their own functioning. Historically, in the early part of the 1900s, it's my understanding that naturopathic medicine and homeopathic medicine were the common ones, and allopathic meant alternative. And so the AMA formed in the early 1900s, I believe, and their goal was to eliminate competition. So unlike in Europe, where they use homeopathy still very strongly, in the United States it was a strong focus to obliterate other modalities. So it's especially true in the United States. And by the way, yes, the United States is 36th in healthcare, but number one in cost nationally. And it's very mechanistically driven. Also, I think the legal situation in our culture, with having more lawyers than any other culture, there's a lot of fears about lawsuits and things. So they'll often run very expensive tests. For example, I had a client come in last week who had pain in her knee. And of course, I believe it's usually emotional, mental. And I've had clients, and I'll say, well, whenever your knee starts to hurt, think about what's going on for you and what you haven't addressed in your life, like a pain in the neck. You know, who's a pain in the neck for you? And so this client came in, and she said her chiropractor told her that she should get an MRI if it didn't go away. So we spent about 2 hours. We did a few needles, something called the cold laser, which is not really supported recently now in our culture, and some hands-on healing, getting the meridians flowing and open, and just helping work out issues and things that were going on for her in her life, so she would be talking while we were working on this. The pain getting very strong, and it moves around, even with acupuncture, where people will feel different points at different times as things move through. And it's all about, I think, mind states and things moving through. So for her, I think of support and feeling supported. And so we did that, and she said, oh, it's so painful. And then by the end, then we took a pause, and we had her, as the intensity moved through at one point very strongly, and then we just did some deep breathing work and allowing her to process things, and the pain gently, it decreased. And then at the end, I had her gently take a pause and move her leg very slowly and gently in new ways, because a lot of it, there's a technique called Rosen body work, and that's out of Berkeley, California, and I'd worked with some other body workers, Traeger practitioners, who incorporated Rosen, and it's a very gentle approach, kind of release and move in a new way. Then she gently moved her leg around and it felt totally relaxed, and she got up and she goes, wow, I don't have to get an MRI now. So there are different ways, but I've had other clients come where, say with sciatica, and you do really deep work or shoulder pain, and then they'll say, oh, it just hurts so much, I can't deal with it, and that's it, and they just shut down. So it's challenging. It can be a challenge to have people that are willing to go into the intensity and come through it. As far as your question, Oness, about disrespect from the industrial medical model for the holistic paradigm, having been raised in that model, in many ways, the biggest challenge, I think, is again the one-pointed view where, for example, a native culture will develop experiences through time, and it's experientially oriented. And as we were discussing earlier, the native cultures being more orally oriented because it was an experiential process and one would process information personally. Well, the Western model is more analytical and they try to remove the personal experience. And so, for example, my father would get upset because they would do studies and they would only have a few people that they would analyze. It wasn't like 80 people and the same for all of them. And that's the challenge of the holistic model, because when you look at a knee, you're not just going to look at how the bones go together. You're going to look at that person's experience and hopefully work with that and do supplements for what they're personally might be missing, which through, say, muscle testing or applied kinesiology isn't going to fall into some general, necessarily, stereotype. So it's a more individualized and it's experiential, and that's not acceptable in a Western model. It has to take all the personal out. So the theme of a garden and that each person is a garden, that can't be reduced into a minimalistic line. Therefore, the criterion and the experiential base is never acknowledged by the Western model, so it's totally alien and disrespected in that regard. Now, the fact that Western medicine hasn't been so effective for many people, because disease is a multidimensional aspect, now they're turning toward it with their own funding, which is opening up the eyes of the Western. So I think there's a lot coming in. And on the Mayan calendar, supposedly this year, 2009, is the year of Eastern and Western medicine conflict. And someone said to me that was good because it meant the other was rising up and was going to be taking a higher position. Your other question, Oness, about why our country is not doing so well and why has it moved to this model, even though it's not functioning, it's 36th internationally and yet the most expensive. My understanding is the robber barons in the early part of the 1900s, and I don't know if it was the Carnegies, but such type families analyzed and they chose allopathic medicine because they realized they could make the most profit off of it. And one of the challenges is, for example, omega-3s being one of the other supplements I forgot to mention earlier that are helpful and important for our body. Something like that, they can't necessarily corner the market in a pharmaceutical context. So they chose to focus on a mechanistic approach where they could isolate and control the research and the outcome. If you talk about, you know, chamomile for calming or clearing heat or liver fire rising, you can't market that. The pharmaceutical companies want to control and lead, and that's not possible in a holistic paradigm because it's actually open and accessible to all.
You are listening to Yat Kedichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Please listen next time for Program 2 of my conversation with holistic health practitioner Sharon Bach. I want to thank Sharon for sharing her knowledge and opinions with us on Wolf Mountain Radio. We shall conclude today's program with a song by native flutist Arcolus Nakai and pianist Peter Cater off the Silver Wave record CD entitled Song for Humanity. The name of the song is Shaman's Call, which I feature as an expression of my gratitude to all traditional healers. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinon Wintakwasin, to all of our relations.
Thank you.